How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, apart from the hay fever that's slowly killing me, but
Oh, you
it's to
suffer
be
from
expected. Yeah,
that.
terribly, and unfortunately, I live in a place called Oak Tree Gardens, which only has one oak tree, and it's right next to my office, which is nice. And it's the oak pollen season, which I'm particularly allergic to, so it's been a fun week.
I think. I'm pretty sure I suffer in some ways because I don't get hay fever as such. I don't do a lot of sneezing, but I do get nosebleeds in the summer, and it only seems to be in the summer. Although I haven't had one yet, touch wood. It's really weird. I mean, I got sorted years ago. So, well, I say I got sorted. Supposedly, it got sorted years ago, but I still get them. But I'm sure it's related somehow. But we're just. I mean, we're literally on the tail end of the. This is probably one of the first ones I'm not sick in, because we're on the tail end of this ridiculous chest infection that we both had. She still got it and coughing. I mean, coughing her guts up to the point of almost being sick. You know, it's like that really when you just can't, and she can't take any drugs because she's breastfeeding.
Yeah, of
So,
course.
she's literally got to ride it through,
Nice.
whereas I can dose up on anything.
I guess that must be fun when you've got. How many kids have you got now? Five?
Five, yeah.
Four? Five? With five kids in the house, I mean, that's seven people. If one of you goes down, I mean, that's a lot of people to be ill at the same time if everyone
Well,
catches
yeah.
something.
Exactly. And then
Oh.
some don't get it, and then some do. And the ones that don't get it are probably going to get a variation of it that they'll modify. And it's just, and then they go back, and then they go to school and they get another variation. And it, you know, that's why, you know, it just seems like we're constantly, I mean, I'm pretty much sick from. November time to this sort of time, and it seems like it's every year because it's Christmas, you know, Christmas, Easter, everyone gets together. There was this big thing last year with this flu strain that everyone got jabbed for. They got jabbed for all these flus, and one strain was didn't make the cut, you know, so it wasn't in there, and that was the one that got everyone. So that's why there was a huge sickness last year, apparently, with people with flu. And then of course with Rosie at Christmas with pneumonia and everything and being in hospital, it's still sort of on the tail end of that, really. It's
Your
just
family's
crazy.
basically an incubation chamber.
Yes, I think, yeah.
That was a well-timed cough as well, thank you.
I think I need to open more windows.
I've got all my
But
windows shut. My house is basically hermetically sealed at the moment. It's like nothing gets in or out.
of course, and you've got your air purifier thing. Does
Yeah,
that deal with pollen?
it's supposed to.
Okay. And
I'm not sure how effective it is.
that doesn't do anything with CO2 though, does it? It's not like a Apollo 13 where it's, scrubbing the CO2 out. It's just doing
No. Well, I don't
allergic stuff.
know. So I've got the Dyson, I forget what they call it now. Cool Pure, I think it's
Yeah.
called. So they do a hot and cold one, but I didn't bother with that because, to be honest, it never gets cold because we've got
Yeah.
radiators and stuff. So I thought, I can't be asked for that. No point spending an extra 70 quid just for the option of having hot air. So it just does the cold. Well, I say cold, it just blows air around, which is, as good as fans are. But it also has a little HEPA filter and purifier in it. And one of the nice things about it is that you could just set it to auto mode and it just sits there sort of on in a low state. But if it detects that the amount of whatever in the air, whether that's dust or pollen or VOCs, then it like ramps up and like speeds up all the airflow so it can purify it faster. So it's pretty good.
Okay. Because the problem I've got is, I've got the office with air conditioning that I had fitted years ago, which is lovely. You know, it's nice and cool in here now, and I can pretty much leave it on because it's got this detection thing. So if it doesn't detect movement, it will go into a low power mode. And because I've got the little owl network monitor, electricity monitor, I can just see what the usage is anyway. So I can see it's not racking up the usage. And then when you walk back in, it sort of kicks in again, but it just keeps the temperature nice and cool. I do turn it off occasionally.
Nice.
But I thought, the whole, I know air conditioning can be considered bad for you, but I thought, it was doing more with the air. I thought it was bringing in air from outside. So, there was fresh air coming in, and then it
Yeah.
was cooling the air. But I get lots of O2 level issues in here. So, I don't have the windows open because I've got the AC on. If it's a really hot day, really nice day, I might have the doors open, just open both double doors and just let the air go through. But I just suffer from this situation where my little sensors go off to say the CO2 level's gone up, and it'll probably go up after this because, you know, I'm not usually talking for an hour or whatever on a call. And I don't know how to solve that really, because I just thought the AC would help there, but clearly it doesn't.
Yeah, you would think so. I guess, yeah, I don't know why that wouldn't help. You'd think it would.
Unless I'm just breathing too much. Need to get some plants. get some trees and plants in here. Fill the whole room.
I mean, the Dyson one, I mean, the filter is just like a bit of carbon, I guess, inside. So it probably captures some of that, but it's not going to drastically change it, I wouldn't think. No. It's supposed to like get 99.9% of harmful stuff. So like if you came in here and just started using hairspray all over the place, it'd purify all that out, I guess.
Oh, cool. It reminds me of those, you know, those like drink demos with the life tubes, whatever they call it, life straw, I think it was called. And it's that thing you can buy, and then you can literally walk up to a river and just dip it in the water, and then just suck through the other end, and it real time filters the water into pure water. Yeah. And there was a demo years ago by Bill Gates. He was involved because, you know, donates things and invests in stuff. And it was this water purifying, like almost like a thermos flask type thing, like just a water, you know, cup. And he took this glass full of water straight from a fish tank, this like murky, horrible fish tank that was just the grossest thing you've ever seen, and poured it into the into this thermos, whatever it was, you know, did the top up, poured it back out into a glass. It came out perfectly clear, and then he drank it.
And it was probably comes out cleaner than it does from the tank.
Yeah, it was exactly. I mean, because it's all based on the filter. So it's just based on the, you know, the size of the microscopic particles, and if it's filtering small enough, it gets rid of all that stuff. So it's quite crazy. But yeah, it reminds me of that actually. It's quite funny. But
it's good. One of the nice things about it is that it has its own like app and API stuff, so that you can like remotely turn it on and off and stuff. Which is great, because once you've got that, then inevitably someone had written a Homebridge plugin for it. So nice. I can control it all with Siri, and it's given me about 9 different buttons into my HomeKit app, because it gives me one to tell me the humidity, one to tell me the temperature, one to tell me if auto mode is on and off, whether night mode's on or off, the current speed, the current like air quality level. So there's loads and loads and loads of buttons and stuff in it. The only negative is, like, I think it's an Apple bug, is that I can't use the temperature as a sensor. And I've noticed it with my Hive system and one of my little HomeKit sensors I've got in the garage, is that what I wanted to do is have it so that if the temperature gets above, say, 22 degrees, then the fan will kick in. But for some reason, it's all grayed out in the Home app for automations, which is a terrible part of the HomeKit app anyway. Like, it's always been a bit flaky. But yeah, that doesn't seem to work, which is a shame. But it works really well with HomeBridge. So I can just set the office purifier speed to 80% and it'll kick in, which is nice, because sometimes I can't be asked to pick the remote up because I'm incredibly lazy.
No, I mean, the I get that with a few sensors. I can't remember what it was. I think it was the Hue. I think it's a Hue one I've got. It came up as a... Oh, the Office Pantry comes up, because I've got the Office and Pantry Nest. I've got a few dimmers that come up. And then the HomePods are in there. The annoying thing I found, I was trying to get my Foscam cameras to work with HomeBridge, and there is a plugin, but it doesn't work particularly well. So the way it works at the moment is you have to add the camera in. You know, when you go through the sort of adding a peripheral and you can do like the scan, you have to say like you don't have a barcode, and then it will do a detection thing, and it will look and find the device, and it will say found a camera. You go, ah, cool. So you add that camera in. But there's something wrong with the way the configuration, or it doesn't like the R2 cameras I'm using. So basically, I get a thumbnail which can appear in my favorite list in the Home app, and I get as soon as you load it, it does. It seems to do it every 10 seconds, so it's just doing it now, and it's just updated for the two cameras I've put in. But when you click on it, you're supposed to go to the live feed, and that's what fails. It just says no response, camera's not responding, which is a real shame, because it would be nice to get that working. I'd like to get it working with the Ring cameras as well.
Yeah, I'd like that with the Ring cameras.
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing about...
They're supposed to. Because they said that they're going to add HomeKit support. Like, I am a little bit annoyed with them, because on their website it says HomeKit support tick.
Yes.
Which is cheeky, because it isn't. They've just promised that they're going to add it, but it is bad because it doesn't have it now.
But the funniest
really
thing
matters,
with
but I think
the crazy thing with all this is with HomeKit is what I learned from... Homebridge, which, you know, I knew that HomeKit devices to be fully HomeKit compatible needed a hub. You know, aware of that because Philips came out with one and all this stuff. But it wasn't till I was playing around with Homebridge that you realized that all these hubs are little, you know, Unix boxes running Homebridge, running equivalent of. It's that sort of thing.
And they don't need a hub.
No.
They don't need a hub at all. It's Philips only does because they'd already built all their bulbs. And so it was cheaper for them to, rather than rebuild all the bulbs, to have a HomeKit chip in. It's easier to build a hub. But you don't need a hub. So there's plenty of HomeKit stuff that doesn't have a hub.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it would be much more sense if Apple would just embrace this whole like Homebridge system, if you like, and come up with a way that just uses your Mac or an iPad or your Apple TV or whatever, just like it does as a Homebridge anyway, you know, to communicate with existing stuff that's going on in the house, to be so that we can do our own stuff like this, you know. So there's no, I know they want to keep control of everything and have the official HomeKit thing and all that stuff, but Homebridge is so simple. You know, I've managed to get loads of stuff connected that are probably never going to get worked on. You know, what is it? Wemo said they were going to do Homebridge support and come up with a hub, and it's still not. I still can't find that. But I've managed to get all my Wemo devices working just with Homebridge. It's fine.
I think there's two things about it. One, the reason that they don't open it, well, the reason that they didn't open it up originally is because of all the security stuff. Like when you see like baby cameras being taken over by Russian bots, and you know,
your
smart TV people can see it. It's understandable that they want to keep it locked down, not just for the sake of it, because they don't really get any money from it, but for the security aspect of it, that you know that it is going to be fully encrypted end to end, because that's one of the requirements for HomeKit, which is why they needed a chip, because most of the devices that connect to it haven't got a powerful enough CPU to do it in software. So that's the reason why it is that way. But then they have changed it not that long ago. I think it was iOS 11.3. Yeah, that's WWDC. But now you can do it through software. If you have a more powerful, like the Ring cameras could probably do it, because they've probably got a pretty decent CPU in them to do the encryption on the fly. But something like a light bulb probably isn't going to. It's still going to need the chip. But it still needs to be authorized by Apple in that it goes through with their ciphers and stuff, because otherwise you open yourself up to security problems, which, I mean, that's part of it with Homebridge. I mean, you are just connecting to an open API, so it's not encrypted between you and your Wemo or anything like that. It's just whatever their public API is, or sometimes private APIs. So I get why they don't make it way more open, but the fact that you can do it through software now means that device manufacturers should be able to do it. But also, I mean, you get a lot of competition now, because, you know, Wemo doesn't have HomeKit support, but there are plenty of other smart plugs that do. So, you know, at some point they will add support if enough people go, well, we're not going to buy these products because they don't have the native HomeKit support that I want. So is that. I am annoyed with Ring, though, because it's been ages since they promised that they were going to add it. It supposedly got the chip and everything inside it, because they made the promise long before the software option was available. So there must be a HomeKit chip in the camera. I just don't understand why it isn't active.
Yeah, their stuff is
strange.
Their stuff is a little bit of a mess. I mean, it seems like the desktop OS, Mac OS app, is causing all kinds of weird stuff. So I had a floodlight on the back gate, and I had a Ring stick-up cam, solar-powered, which pretty much worked most of the time, but there were times when it ran out of juice. But you know, most of the time it was fine. Probably once a year I'd have to just top it up. And then I had another one at my office door, and I had a floodlight that was installed when the office was renovated. That's just a PIR, you know, thing. So I decided I was going to replace these with the Ring floodlight. So ordered that from Amazon because of Prime and 30 days and everything. And it came, and it looked, you know, looked quite cool to start with. But the setup process was a bit of a nightmare. Basically, cut a long story short, there's not enough space in the little mounting thing. So that if you've got a longer cable, because I didn't want to start having to trim cables back, and because I hate doing anything like that where you trim a cable back and then later for some reason you'll need it longer and you're stuffed. I'd rather just be able to, you know, and we're not talking about 10 feet. We're talking about a foot of cable sticking out of the garage wall, you know. So there's not enough space inside. There's all this weird stuff inside. I don't know if you noticed it, but they've obviously got lots of different switches and cabling going on. And the way they've wired it is this stuff is quite sort of exposed with these little clips in the back. And I didn't really know what that was, so I just pushed it out of the way. wired it all up. They give you a little hanging thing, which is supposed to be quite cool because it lets you, because it's heavy, this thing, and you've got to sort of wire it, wire through your backing plate. I mean, you've done it, and through onto the main mounting. So they give you this little hang thing, which sort of lets you just hook it onto the back plate and hang it there while you do all the wiring, which is great, but only in certain situations. It didn't work for me for the garage, for example. So I had to sort of have the garage door open, put a box there, and stick this thing on the box to sort of hold it there. And then the worst bit was just
getting... That's what I should have done.
Yeah, and the worst... So there's two, the two worst bits about it were there's like a waterproof ring, a rubber ring that goes around this backing plate, which obviously then when you put the other plate on top with the cameras on, it seals. You know, it's nice and sealed. The rubber ring is not like stuck or glued to this backing plate, so it just comes off easily. And because it's a circle and it's rubber, it's one of these nightmare things to put back on. And every time I was trying to mount it, I'm trying to fight with the cabling to tuck the cabling out of the way of the two screws that it's got to, that I've got to be able to go through. And there was a lot of stuff going on back there. It's heavy, and you're sort of reaching up to try and do it, or you're on a step, and it's just, it was just quite, you know, a lot of hassle. And then the damn ring would come off. So as you sort of adjusted it, the damn ring would come off. You have to take the whole thing off again, rest it on something again, because otherwise it's pulling on the electric cables, and redo everything again. And then finally, when I got these, when I got it to go through and I got the little screws to sort of push through, I was having that horrific situation, which was worse on the office because I was up high, where I'm having to push against the damn thing to apply pressure to get the screws to show through so I can put those little screw covers on to secure it all. And when I was up high, that was a, you know, a bit more worrying. So I was having to hold on to something. You're having to sort of push with both fingers, but push with one to try and get the thing on. Then you've got this twiddly little thing that you've got to then get on, which wasn't biting. And I dropped a couple of times. So then you've got to rest it and go back down and get it. And it was just, I was really getting angry at one point. With the first one was the worst experience. The second one was better. But it felt like at every point in the process, I was being blocked by something. You know, I was being blocked by the rubber ring. I was being blocked by trying to fit the cabling in. I was being blocked by when I finally got it all in, the damn screw thing wasn't long enough. If they just made that thread longer, like a half a centimeter, it would have been perfect. So it was a pain, but I got it working and it's all up and running. But I'll just quickly say the one problem I had was I got it all working yesterday, tested it all. They've got some very confusing stuff in their software, the way they describe things, because they have a lighting schedule, and you could read that in two ways. You could read it as turn the lights on during these times, or turn the lights on using the sensor during these times, so you can lock it down for a particular time. I thought it was the latter. It's not. It's the former. So when I set it up to say turn the lights on, the lights just stayed on, and it was like, right, okay, that's not what that's for. So I reset all that, got it all working. Then yesterday, when was yesterday? Yeah, bank holiday was Monday. Yesterday I set my laptop up because I hadn't used my laptop all weekend. My laptop has the Ring app, the Mac OS version.
I didn't even know they had a Mac OS version.
Yeah, it's hidden away on their website. It's a native app. It's quite nice.
Huh.
I say that it causes problems because obviously it's synced with my account. And so now it's got all of the cameras set up in it. But for some reason, it doesn't sync the settings. So my phone has motion detection on for, you know, certain cameras. And then if you go into the app, it didn't have the motion detection on, or vice versa. You know, I've switched it off in the phone and it's on in the desktop app. So I was getting this weird situation where I walked out of the office and I get the little jingle on the chime thing to say there was office motion. The floodlight cam is quite nice because you can draw these zones, as you know. You know, you can draw these nice zones, which is really
cool. You can do that with the Ring Pro as well.
Yeah, that's really nice. So I got it all set up, and I hear the little jingle for the chime, and then I look back, and the lights have come on. And this is like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, well, that's weird. So I, you know, check the back gate. The back gate was the same. It's like, this is really odd. So anyway, jiggery-pokery, messing around, still can't get it working. Started tweeting them. They're like, oh, you can set the time schedule. It's like, no, that's not how that works. The time schedule turns it on at that time and off at the time you want it to go off. It doesn't work with the sensor. So I do a bit of Googling, and I find someone who basically has exactly the same problem. A few people had the same problem. This is going back months. And one of them said it's the Mac OS app. It's screwing up the settings or something. So I shut down the Mac OS app. I went into the Mac OS app and turned off the motion settings, motion detection in there. Haven't had the problem since. And it was weird because it started yesterday, and yesterday was when I fired up the laptop. So far, I haven't recreated it, and I've given them my details. But, you know, as soon as you talk to anybody in support with these things, you've got to be so careful because you say, oh, well, I've, you know, quit the OS app, the OS X, the Mac OS app now, and it seems to have solved the problem. They go, okay, great, let us know if it happens again. Yeah, well, no, no, hold on. this is not the solution.
No.
This is, you know, it, you know, hurts when I lift my arm up. Don't lift your arm up. You know, it doesn't work. Doesn't work like that. You know, you've got to look into this problem. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I won't download the macOS app then.
I mean, it's great. I mean, the cameras are lovely. The cameras are really nice. The quality's way better. I mean, I noticed the stick-up cam's gone now. It's now called there's the floodlight camera and then the spotlight cam, isn't it? So the spotlight camera's replaced the stick-up cam. So it's.
So I have the spotlight cam. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The field view is amazing. I mean, the amount of the one on the office now just literally almost picks up the whole garden. It's incredible. Really nice.
So I've got the Ring Pro, obviously, on the front door. But then over my garage, I've got the spotlight, the floodlight cam, which is the one that you just put up. And then in my garden, I've got the spotlight cam wired, which is basically the camera bit from the floodlight cam. But instead of two massive big floodlights, you have two small LED lights on the side.
Yeah.
And the setup process for that was way nicer because that one comes with the cable. And the cable is about 5 meters long. And it's like, well, that's fine. You just put the camera up, done. Whereas for some reason, the floodlight camera does not come with a cable. So you have to provide your own plug. You have to provide your own wire.
Yeah.
And you have to wire it yourself. And it seems to have been done for the American market where they expect you to be mounting it on a junction box or something. Because the cable is like designed to go out the back of it. And out the back of it is my garage wall. Because that's where it's mounted. It's like, well, I'm not going to drill through this massively thick wall. I don't have a drill bit long enough to drill through my garage wall, and I don't really want to put a hole all the way through. So I ended up going down the bottom, sort of like you have, and it was an absolute nightmare trying to get it in there and getting it to stay and wiring it all. And the wiring's fine. It's just trying to get the cover on with the cable sticking out the bottom. It was just horrendous. I don't understand why the spotlight cam that's cheaper comes with a plug and a cable, but the floodlight cam doesn't. It seems very, very strange to me.
Yeah, it's like with the floodlight cam, there's the emphasis that they seem to be making that you're replacing an existing floodlight, and so they've made the assumption that you're going to have a cable sticking out of a wall, which I did, but it still could have been better. You know, it could have because it basically determined. I've had to put it in a position that I was forced to because the cable has to go through that hole. Whereas I would have actually preferred to have brought it down the wall a little bit and maybe just pin the cabling, you know, tidy the cabling up because it's sort of just under the eaves of the garage. And so it's great view, but there's just that left corner is just blocked by the eaves. But it's not the end of the world. No. But it's just the fact that I was forced to put it there because that's the way it's cabled. It would have been nicer like if the maybe the other reason they do it is because if there's a cable there, you could easily cut the cable and then you've turned it off. But let's face it. All they have to do is cut the cable at the front of your house where the internet goes in and you're done. So, you know, if someone really wants to do that, they can. But I noticed on their site they've got, because I've got the, I didn't go for the Pro. I upgraded my doorbell. I went for the Doorbell 2. I didn't go for the Pro only because of the wiring things that they were talking about.
And it seemed
like a bloody nightmare. And the 2 was just a quick, and it, well, I say it was quick. They've got a mounting plate. It comes with nice packaging. So they've got this mounting plates that angle it, which is quite cool, but they've also got the plate conversion to say if you've got the old doorbell, you can use this conversion plate to use the same screw holes, which is a really nice feature. The problem is that, and I think this goes back to what you were saying, is Ring seem to assume that everybody who's got this is going to be drilling it into a wood. You know, a wood frame on a door or a wood wall or a wood garage wall, because a lot of houses in the States are like that. And so when you see photos on the website, it's all wood. You know, it's all being drilled into, you know, paneling or something.
Or drywall, like outside an apartment or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they don't think about... So they give you the nice little drill bit, but that drill bit's not necessarily ideal for going through a massive great wall on an English house, you know.
It's not a masonry drill bit.
No, and also the plate that they gave you, the conversion plate that they gave me, isn't thick enough. It's just not... And the drill holes are in a weird position. So what actually happened was when I tried to use it, it created this sort of gap. It wasn't screwed on all four corners. There was like two screws halfway down and two screws at the bottom. So it just felt like it could easily be pulled off, you know. And it was slightly bent on the wall. I didn't like it, so I just fitted their angled plate, which was much better. But I noticed on their website they've got there's some other third party, you know, plates that will do angles and things that you can do and adjust the angle, which is quite nice. And also Ring for the Doorbell 2 have done a mounting plate with solar panels built in, which I'd love to know how that works, because it's literally just a thicker wedge around the doorbell with these very slim solar panels on the sides and on the top. And maybe, I guess, they think that's enough to be able to top it up, which, you know, might be the case.
Probably doesn't need much battery.
Yeah, because I gave my mum the old doorbell one and went down and set it up for her. But it's not wired. It wasn't wired. And so it was, you know, because she's, you know, her hands, it's difficult trying to unscrew a tiny little screw and two tiny little screws at the time and take this thing off. And she couldn't get it off. You know, when I told her to charge it, she could not get this thing off the wall. You know, the old one where you had to sort of push, slide it up. And typically I went down there and just went, boom, and it came straight off. She's like, oh. But anyway, I ordered her the doorbell too as well. And just set that up because it's got the removable battery. And I've got another battery coming that she can have topped up. And it just seems the battery seems much better on it anyway. You know, it's lasting much longer. And I've added her doorbell to my account so that I can configure it or whatever if I need to. So it's pretty cool. I mean, generally I'm pleased with Ring stuff, but...
Does the Ring 2 have the motion zone stuff? Or is that still just the powered ones?
I don't think it does.
Because my... The Ring Pro has it, and then both my other cameras have got it as well. So the floodlight cam and the spotlight cam are both motion sensitive, which is great because I get so many motion alerts that I'm constantly tweaking those little zones.
No, it's got the old, what looks like the alien detector from Aliens. Which is quite neat. But, I mean, I don't really mind it for the front door. It works quite well, but it is quite cool. I mean, the only thing that's weird about it is you can set up multiple zones and you can name them. But then when you get activation of something, it doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't, you know, it would be good if it said, you know, it's coming from the shed or something. Do you know what I mean? If it lets you name the zone, I just would have thought that would be part of the notification. It doesn't seem to be. It's quite impressive. I just didn't like the physical setup. I didn't like, but yeah, once it was set up,
a pain in the ass. It really is. So I had a look on the website a minute ago, and if you search their support system for the word HomeKit, nothing comes up at all, and it's not listed on any of their product pages anymore. But apparently, they tweeted in February when they were acquired by Amazon to say that they are still working on the HomeKit support for the floodlight cam and the.
Of course, yeah, they were. Yes, they were acquired. Well, that would make sense as well. Why, HomeKit's not going to get top priority, is it?
No, but apparently they are still working on it. It's going through testing, so we'll see. But I mean, that's been going on for years. I mean, that's why I bought the Ring Pro, and that's why I bought the floodlight cam originally, because those were the two that were going to get HomeKit support. So it's frustrating that it's still not there, and that there's a little decent frustrating. Way of having it. Yeah, I don't really care because I mean the app works fine. I don't really need it in the HomeKit thing, but it's just annoying that that is one of the things that they sold it based on. It's very similar to how Parrot, you know, the people that make the Bebop drones.
Oh yes,
they advertised the Bebop drone on the side. They said it had this free flight mode, which was like an app you could use to plan routes and have it fly automatically, and that didn't actually come out for 9 months afterwards. So literally it didn't even have inside what it said it did on the box, and then when that update came out you had to pay for it.
It's like an Apple thing pre-announcing something. It reminds me of have you seen on Netflix the Toys That Made Us series?
I have not.
It's really good. There's only about 4 or 5 episodes, but it talks about they're really good specials on the evolution of different toys. So I think the first one was Star Wars. Second one, I think, was Barbie. Mm-hmm. Then I think it was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And then it was and then G.I. Joe, I think, of the 5. And it's really good. So the Star Wars one, they talk about the whole thing with Kenner, who were the people that picked up the original contract because everyone else turned it down. Yeah. And Kenner managed to get an amazing deal in terms of percentages and stuff, and they couldn't make the damn toys quick enough, and so they did that thing where you bought your kids an empty box. Did you ever hear about this?
No.
So basically, yeah. So it was really, it's really cool to watch. You've got to watch it. But they had these meetings where it's really funny. So they had to go into these meetings where they had to show the toys that they were going to make, these little characters. And typically and apparently these toys, you know, when they're making figures and things, they can take years, you know, take months, years to get into production. And they needed to do this quickly. So they went into these meetings and they took like a sort of old character that was some other toy and with plasticine and stuff and put plasticine on to create these. And that's what they went and said, this is Greedo and this is so-and-so. And they got sign off and they went ahead and did it, but they could not get the production done in time for Christmas. So instead of, I guess, I don't know what they could have done, but I mean, in the days of Twitter, I'm sure they'll got loads of suggestions and loads of criticism. But basically, the parents bought their kids a box for like $100 or whatever. And the box, it looked like, you know, like a sort of theater, like the sort of thing you might get from an old cornflakes box that you can turn into a theater or something. You know, it was just like a box with a hole in it. And it had these cards in it. And the cards were the characters, you know. You've basically bought these characters, but you can't cash them in until February or March when they're actually made. And they sold a shitload of them. You know, it was a huge deal. It was ridiculous. They were getting, you know, hundreds of dollars for this box or whatever. People, you know, Kenner is selling a box to kids and stuff, but it worked and they sold a shitload of them. And then when February came around or March came around, people sent off the little slip or whatever they got, or they walked into a store and they swapped it and they got all the toys. It's just so funny. And it also went through how, and there's a word for this, and I can't remember what it is, but it's basically repurposing one toy for another brand.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so they had like a shooting game or a landing game, you know, like the sort of carrier landing type things or whatever it was, toys, and years earlier. And so they had, you know, all the molds, all the production and everything. So they literally changed that to Star Wars TIE Fighter Challenge. And, you know, the color, the logos on the box and the colors have changed and they've stuck a couple of Rebel logos on it or whatever. It's the same toy. It's just amazing. And that's what they did as the stopgap, because they didn't have these custom made Star Wars toys. They didn't have the Millennium Falcons or anything of that stuff. So they just repurposed all these other games. You know, like, it wasn't this one, but imagine like Guess Who, you know, you could take exactly the same thing, but just do Star Wars characters.
Yeah.
And they did stuff like that. It's really funny. But, and the He-Man one's even more hysterical because some of these old guys are arguing with each other over who actually created the character and stuff. It's very funny, but yeah, it reminded me of that pre-selling something years ahead and then either delivering or not.
Merry Christmas, Timmy. Your gift this year is poor project management.
Yeah, it's just the box. Where's the toy inside? Yeah, there's just a box. It's just the box.
Enjoy.
And then you go, yeah, I made that box into something else. What? You're supposed to cash that box in March, yeah. You bloody idiot.
Threw away the bit of paper inside.
Yeah, draw all over it.
I really like that idea, because then if your kid's a little shit in February, you could be like, nope, you're not getting your Christmas present now.
Burn it in front of them. That's the thing, though. Nowadays, you would do that, and you buy the box, and it would get left in their room, and then some cleaner or somebody would come around, take it, stick it in the recycling. Yeah, I just threw that thing away. It was rubbish. It's like, no. That's the only way to get those toys. Oh dear. Anyway, what else have we got? Ring. Oh, I had a little thing about Eero, which is quite interesting. They did an update in their app, and I'm guessing there's a firmware update, but maybe not. I don't know how they've done this, but I noticed this thing in the Eero app called Smart Queue Management. It's in the lab section, and I don't know full details about what it is, but it's something to do with prioritizing traffic and prioritizing devices on your network, so that, you know, you can have a device that's doing 4K streaming and another device that's backing up and another one that's doing something else, and they're not all interfering with each other. It sort of manages, it's a queue quality of service thing essentially. Nice. But it's supposed to shape the traffic so that everybody gets a good experience, which is quite interesting. And I turned it on last night, and you know, supposed to make devices feel snappier and stuff when they're accessing things, and I haven't noticed. Oh, it could be placebo. I haven't noticed anything worse, but it does seem to be a bit better. But I don't know. But just a little thing I thought I'd mention. What else have we got?
Yeah, I heard about one of these as something similar, which was a router that's come out that is just for, it's designed for gamers, and it basically prioritizes PC traffic. And then they did another one which does the same, but then also prioritizes any Xbox One traffic. Apparently increases your or decreases your lag by about 60% or something. So it's literally just the router knows, oh, that device is an Xbox, so you're getting priority over everything else that's happening on your system. And, you know, it's a good idea. I mean, it'd be nice if routers just had that sort of thing built in, so you can say, this is the priority device. So if anything is trying to connect, this is the thing that should be, you know, more important. So, like, I could set my Mac Pro to be more important than my iPad, for example, so that if I'm downloading a shit ton of stuff, that'll keep going at full power. I mean, obviously, it'd be better if you could do it on a process by process basis. So you could be like, okay, you know, Backblaze can be lower down the priority order because that can just kick in when everyone's asleep and the network isn't being used.
Exactly.
But yeah, tricky problem to solve. I'm still like, I mean, this goes in nicely with the fact that the airport stuff is now officially dead. Apple have finally come out and said, yeah, we're not making any more of those, which is interesting. But, you know, it's one of those funny situations where you get a lot of people saying, oh, fucking iOS is so shit. They really need to get, you know, spend more time on it. They need to be doing better bug fixes. We need a Snow Leopard release. Everything needs to be much more stable than it is currently. And then when they get rid of a project that they didn't really need, it's like, oh, why have they got rid of Airport?
I know.
So, well, I probably need those people to make all those other changes. But yeah, that's gone, but there's nothing to like replace it, like in the UK at least. Like, I would have an Eero, but I can't be bothered ordering it from America and dealing with all that shit. It's like, why isn't there something like that here yet? Because you tried out the, which one is it? Orb? Is that
I tried the Orbi and I tried the Netgear. Yeah, I think, is it Netgear Orbi? Yes, Netgear Orbi. And I tried another one that was, I think it was D-Link or TP-Link or something. It was a mesh thing. That one I couldn't even get working. Couldn't even get, so the Orbi I got working. So the Orbi was this huge, great sort of thing. And then you had a smaller satellite. And the idea was the two communicate through some high-speed back channel and then, you know, drench your house in Wi-Fi, basically. But I had difficulty just getting the two damn things to talk to each other. You know, it was one of these crazy situations where, and you know, the nature of these things are you're setting one up downstairs, you're setting one up upstairs. So it's not like you're next to them. So when there's a problem and it's saying, is the light flashing on the front? You have to go run upstairs, check that one, check down the bottom one, make sure they're both, you know, in sync. And if they're not, you know, you're stuffed. So I ended up having to sort of plug it in near to the first one to configure it, then take it upstairs. And then when I actually checked the speeds, it just wasn't that impressive. I was expecting to get much higher speeds. You know, I've got a 300 meg connection. Wi-Fi with these devices, I should be able to get 300 odd meg. And I was getting like 20 meg upstairs, which was, you know, up one floor up and one room over. It's not like it's miles away. So I just wasn't that impressed with it. And it had, and I did that thing where I'd obviously switched over my network to it. And then it had real problems with the ring. And the ring was not being picked up. And then I started looking into it, which is probably a bad time to start looking into it after you've done it. And it said, yeah, basically the Rings was having problems with mesh networks. But it's not Ring's fault because Ring works with the Eero. So it was something that the Orbi was doing that the Ring device didn't like, you know, the doorbell didn't like. So anyway, it got to that point where I'd spent like 3 hours in the evening trying to sort this. And I thought that I've had enough, and that got packed away. The other one, the TP-Link, I think it was basically an hour, and that was, I can't even get the app to connect to this damn device. You know, it's sitting right next to the phone and it's saying it can't find it, or it would say it could find it, then it lost connection. It's just like, forget it, back in the box, sent that back. And the Eero, it has been the less painful. I've had a few issues, just a few little glitches, but to be honest, that was the first part of that was my setup, because I was trying to keep my Airport Extreme but turned off. So it's just acting as a dumb hub, because then I didn't have to worry about any external port stuff. So, I say dumb hub, it was doing DHCP. The Eero was in bridge mode, but that was causing weird issues with the other Eeros where the DHCP management was being lost. And so that's why I thought I was getting out. Well, the recent outages were Virgin, but at this point I thought I was getting outages with Virgin. And that's why I set up Pingdom to check, because it wasn't Virgin. It was the duplicate IPs being clashing, and that's what was causing devices to stop working. So as soon as I just binned all that and switched over to Eero. It was fine. And it was so much nicer. I mean, you can go in and set up you can reserve an IP for a device and set up an external port for it, and it doesn't reboot. You know, the network doesn't restart. It's just instantly active. So they should sell them over here. I don't know why. I'm guessing it's an EU legal thing, or it's a quality thing. Some sort of approval hasn't happened. Yeah, exactly. The only annoying thing is if anyone is interested in getting them, I got them through eBay, brand new. The only thing is that I thought it would be USB, you know, USB cable type thing, so you can just change the plug. Nope, the plug is built in. The American plug is built in to a USB-C connection that goes into the device. And I thought, okay, well, that's fine. I can get a replacement USB-C. No, because the power requirements that the Eero uses is so bloody unique, I couldn't find anything that matches it. And I tried buying adapters from Amazon. Nothing would work. So I ended up buying a little adapter and then just literally sticking a zip tie around to sort of connect the two together so it can't be knocked out. and it's worked.
That's always what you want for your networking, you know, like a really solid setup.
Exactly. The only thing about mesh, and the only criticism I'd have, and I don't think they can solve this, because I don't think it's their problem. I think it's a device issue, is that I'll get situations where, so I have the dining room downstairs is where the router comes in. So that's where the internet comes in. So that's where the primary router is. So if you're connected to the dining room Eero, you're good. You know, you're on the fastest possible connection. Then upstairs in our bedroom, which again is one room up, one floor up, one room across, is another one. Then one room up and one room across the other way is Leo's room. So he's got one in there, because the back of the house sometimes gets a bit of hassle. Then there's one in the playroom downstairs, which is the other corner of the house, and one in the sunroom. So I think I've probably got too many. so I've got five in the house and one in the office. And the only issue with them is that, which I think is that the devices like the iPhone are not detecting what's the best one to connect to, because all they're connecting to is, you know, BF Home, which is my Wi-Fi now. And so they're connecting to that, and then it's just being, you know, handled on whatever one is being used. And so I'll get situations where I'm upstairs and it should be connecting to Leo's room or the master bedroom one, and it's connecting to the downstairs dining room, which is a great one to be connected to for speed, but not necessarily for the Wi-Fi signal going through the house.
Yeah.
So that's the only issue. But it's getting better. I mean, it's still way better than it was. You know, the situation I had before was I had Airport Extreme set up, and I tried doing the extending network, didn't really work very well. So I had those little power line things, and that was the only way I could get it to work. And we had areas of the house that were just dead.
That's what I have.
And I don't get that anymore.
So I've got an Airport Extreme downstairs in my living room, and then I've got an Airport Express up in my bedroom, which is the other side of the house, connected via a TP-Link home plug system. And then another one in the garage connected the same way. And it's fine, it works, but the internet connection upstairs is noticeably slower. It's just not that great. I want to change it out for something else, but it's just waiting for something decent to come along. That's the problem.
Yeah, I've heard there's a, is it Ubiquiti or something, is one brand that's supposed to have good mesh capability. The thing that I liked about the Eero was some of these other ones, and whether it makes a difference or not, I don't know. You know, this, I've got no way of testing it really. But the thing that was sounded good about the Eero is it's a tri-band system. So you have your 5 gigahertz and your 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi, and then it has this other 5 point something, I think it's 5.8 or something, gigahertz channel. And that channel is purely for the satellites to talk to each other. So they're not talking to each other on the same Wi-Fi network as you're connecting to, which I liked that idea of, because it felt like that was a better solution. But I've seen other people using, you know, Eero first generation did it with dual band, so they didn't have the back channel, and it still was great. So it's one of these things, you know. I know other people that have set up mesh networks and it hasn't helped them at all. You know, they've still had problems. I guess the problem is we just got too many things connecting. It was like the Hue problems I had, where I had to move my Hue router to a different room because I was just getting too much interference. Even though the Hue router, the Hue hub, when it connects to a light bulb, that light bulb should act as an extender to the next one. So in theory, as long as it can connect to one of your light bulbs in a room, it should connect to all of them.
Yeah, but it's Zigbee.
Yeah, but I was getting this weird situation where if I put the hub in the dining room, which is where it used to be, I get devices that don't get picked up, and then HomeKit complains. And the weird thing is that, yeah, they were connected because you could go into the Hue app and turn them on and off. But it would say in the Hue app that there's a problem, which was the frustrating thing. So there's obviously a ping or something going on saying, are you okay? Are you okay? Yeah. And it was just missing out now and again. And it wasn't averaging it out. And it was just saying, oh, there's a problem. As soon as I moved it upstairs, problem solved. So I'm guessing it was just there was just too much interference where it was.
It's better to have those things upstairs anyway, because then they're actually closer to the bulbs below.
That's true. Which, yeah, I mean, I don't get any issues with it now. And there's supposed to be a Hue app update, apparently, which is much nicer.
Yeah, version 3 update went out yesterday, so now you can do things that the original one used to do, which they famously broke. So things like you can choose a colour from a picture, which I never really saw the point of, but people liked. And there's a few other nice little bits and pieces in there. I mean, to be honest, I rarely use the Hue app. I use Siri for everything through Homebridge. I don't even have the Home Hub. It's not called a Home Hub, is it? Hue Hub 2. I've just got the original one and then use Homebridge plugin for it. But I just use the HomePod all the time to change lights and stuff. And I've got a load of those dimmer switches around the place. And I got those molds on eBay so that I could stick them onto the light switches.
Oh, yeah, I got a couple of those.
Yeah, they're nice, aren't they?
Yeah, I got one for the office. I've got one for the house as well. They are really nice, yeah. Because now my light switch was always on in the office anyway. Yeah. So, and the other thing I did is I got it set up in the kids' rooms, but using, I buy this. It was very ridiculous with the Hue setup because, and I spoke to them about it, and they're like, yeah, you have to sort of say no to this question, and then you can set it up. Because basically, these devices can be picked up by HomeKit, and if you've configured it in the Hue app, it's clashing with the HomeKit configuration. So you have to sort of say, I don't want to configure it in the Hue app, but the way that it asks you was very confusing. Huh. And so when you don't do that and it's not then set up, you can go into the HomeKit app and you can set different, you can't do, it didn't work with the dimmer as in like a volume control, you know, it wasn't variable, but it does let you assign a value to the four buttons. So I've got it working in the kids' room, because I think the issue I had was in the Hue app, I couldn't make the switch control specific devices. It wouldn't work. It just would not work. I could not get it to work. And the situation I've got in the girls' room is they've got these little lights next to their bed, and then you've got the main light. And I wanted to have their buttons controlling their lights so that they could turn their lights on and off. And I couldn't get it to do it because the Hue app configuration wouldn't let you. So that's why I did it in HomeKit, because that does let you, you know, it lets you, I could make the button do something completely different. But you just have to, so maybe they've changed that at the latest Hue app and made it clearer, but they're really nice. I really like it. And it's magnetic, so you can sort of just pull it off the wall or just have, and then snap it back in. And they're only about £8, those 3D printers.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Very easy to fit.
Yeah, the guy's made loads of them. It's like his 47th revision from his 3D printing system, because you can buy like knockoff ones that someone else has basically just stolen his design and done it. But he's like, yeah, that was like my 12th version, which I stupidly put online, but then people started using it and selling it themselves.
Oh no.
So he doesn't do that anymore. He's like, this is now the 47th version, so things have improved like significantly between those ones.
I've got to set up I bought a new hub for my underfloor heating as well, because I replaced the years ago when the office was done and the heating was put in. I'd got them to put the thermostat against the wall in the corner, because I, for some stupid reason, I thought that was where my desk was going to be, you know, away from the windows, which when I immediately walked into the finished office, I thought, no, I want to sit here, you know, next to the window. So the bloody thermostat was way in the corner. It's now behind a printer, which is completely inconvenient. So I bought a new thermostat. I didn't realize I could change it. You know, I didn't realize it was as simple as things like the Nest. So once we got the Nest, I thought maybe I can do that in the office. And I realized, well, you can, because the underfloor heating system is just a couple of few cables. You know, you buy your own thermostat to control it. So I fitted a new thermostat that had a little hub with it. And it has an app, Pro Warm app it's called, that lets you control it and everything from the app. But they then released a HomeKit version. So I've just had that delivered last week. I haven't set it up yet, but it's a new hub that obviously has HomeKit support. So hopefully that means then I've got, because I've now got the air conditioning working through HomeKit using a cool little remote control, which I can't remember the name of, but it just sort of sits, it's stuck to one of the printers and it acts as an
app-enabled remote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that has a Homebridge plugin. So now I can, and I've named everything the same with Alexa as well, which is quite cool. So I can just say, you know, whether it's Dingus, turn on the office air conditioning, or Siri, turn on the office air conditioning, both do the same thing. And then both will set the temperature, which is quite cool. But I think I've mentioned this before. The only thing I've got to be careful of is if you say set temperature, like in the house, if I said set temperature to 23 or something, it was turning on everything. So I then go in the office and then the office would be hot.
Oh, yeah.
Be like, oh, shit, because it's just turned on everything. So I've had to put the Nest into the hallway room and you have to say set hallway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it goes. So that's the only. And I had another issue with that, with naming. I went through this hassle of renaming the Dinguses, the Echoes, because I was calling them after each kid and their room, you know, so that I could intercom them, you know, call Leo's room. And that was clashing, apparently, with some other setup, which was, what was it? It was the light setup. And, you know, these things should, because some of the lights were called, you know, Leo's room. Or, you know, there's a room definition in HomeKit for Leo's room, which has the lights in it. But the Dingus was also called Leo's room.
And it
should be intelligent enough to know that if I want to call Leo's room, there should be some, you know, exposure of the devices to say, can I do calling? Am I a light switch? Am I temperature? Do you know what I mean? That's how it should work.
Instead, it's asking it to call the room, and it's like, well, the room doesn't have a concept of being called,
yes.
So can't do it.
And it was saying, I don't know how to do that and stuff, and it was getting very confusing. So I don't know if that's fixed yet, but I had to then go through sort of renaming exercise. And this is the frustration with these devices, is that I named them that because that seemed like the natural way you would do it. You know, I wouldn't say call Leo, because Leo, okay, he's not old enough to have a phone, but he could be anywhere.
Yeah.
So call Leo's room is much more specific. I want it to call that device. When I then went through a renaming exercise to say, okay, I'll have to call it Leo's Echo, or, you know, Poppy's Echo or whatever.
Yeah.
That's much more confusing now, because then I've got to tell Hannah and other people, if you want to talk to their room, you have to say this, which sort of defeats the object of having that, because it should
be intelligent. Couldn't you just name them all Echo and just say, call the Echo in Leo's room, call the Echo in Poppy's room, etc.?
Oh, I suppose I could do that.
Just call them all Echo. But I don't know if that then interferes with anything where it's like, oh, well, which Echo is it? Because you've got a list of 6 Echoes. But if you're doing it always by room, that's how I'd name it.
Yeah, I could try that. I'll try it with the office one, see if it works. Because with the Echoes, there is some intelligence. If you add the Echo, this was a nice feature they added. If you add the Echo into the room, then when you walk into their room, you can just say, turn the lights on. And it will only turn that room on, because that's the one that heard.
The HomePod does that, and that kind of irritated me at first. Now I've got used to it, it's fine. But that always irritated me about the HomePod. Because when I say turn off the lights in my kitchen, it turns off all the lights throughout the house, because I don't have any lights in my kitchen that are HomeKit enabled.
Right.
But in the bedroom, if I say turn off the lights, it only turns off the lights in my bedroom, because there are HomeKit enabled lights in the bedroom. So it's annoying, because what should happen, in my opinion, is that in the kitchen, it should say there aren't any lights in the kitchen.
Yes.
So that I get used to having to say, okay, turn off all the lights, which is what I have to say on my phone, because I can't say, actually, that's not true, because on my phone I can say turn off the lights, and then it turns off all of them, because it assumes I mean all of them. Really, it should just be a setting, because
it should be.
Most of the time, if I'm turning off the lights in my bedroom, I want to turn them off everywhere. And so I've got used to it now, like the idiosyncrasy of it, that I have to, on my phone or in the kitchen, I can say turn off the lights. But in my bedroom, I have to say turn off all the lights, if that's what I mean. So
yeah,
it's a weird, weird edge case that's really irritating. But
I've had it where it's misheard me when I've said turn the lights on in the sitting room or something. And it's misheard me, and it's just done turn the lights on. And the lights come on.
All the kids' rooms, boom.
Yeah.
So floodlights.
Because my kitchen and dining room don't have any, I think dining room, do the dining room have? No, the dining room doesn't have it, because I moved those lights to the sitting room. So I wouldn't know. So if I'm sitting in the sitting room and I say, turn on the sitting room lights, but it's misheard me as turn on the lights, the sitting room comes on. And I think, cool. None of the other lights have come on. It's later, I go upstairs and all the kids' lights are on. I look outside, the office is on. It's like, oh, shit. So there should be something there that either says, you know, you have to specify all, or you can turn that option off. Or even this will turn on all the house lights. Do you want to do that? You know, and then maybe you can turn that off, that warning off, or something like that. It's that sort of stuff that needs to get better with all these devices. It's that it's having to think sometimes about how you say stuff. Like, for example, we got the oven that's got the Home Connect system, and it's got a skill for Alexa, but I cannot. Oh, she's just come on. I can't. Yeah, thank you. I can't for the life of me remember how to do that, how to turn the oven on to heat up the oven. So if I wanted to preheat it tonight for pizzas, I can't remember because I've got to do a specific, I've got to say, Dingus, tell Home Connect to set oven to intensive heat 300. You know, you've got to go through this. And it shouldn't be necessary because when you do these skills, you can put all of these variations in. You can actually make them a lot more intelligent because I've had skills that I've used where I've said it, I've had to say it one way and then I've forgotten, said it another way and it's worked because they've improved it. So it's definitely possible, but that's the worst thing about it.
It's like my Dyson fan. Like if I say set the office purifier to 100%, it comes out of there and says, sorry, I can't do that. Whereas if I say set the office purifier speed to 100%, then it's fine. It's like, oh, really? Like, you know you're a fan and you know the only thing with a 0 to 100%. Like, I know you're not a light bulb.
Yes, I know that. Exactly. Yeah, it's
frustrating.
Yeah, when you used to be able to say, well, I think you still can say where I could say set girls' room to 20% and it would set the girls' lights to 20%. But then sometimes for some things, I can't remember if it was Siri or something, I had to say, set brightness of girls' room to 20%. And again,
is that because you've got other stuff called girls' room though that's interfered with it? Because that
this is the other thing I find a little bit confusing sometimes with this stuff when you're setting it up is that you're creating, you know, these rooms and things, and you've got to have unique names for devices and services, and the home app is not clear on how all this works. I mean, there was that other home app. Do you remember the other one that came out
before
the
app one? Still available. I still use it because it's actually better for a lot of stuff.
Exactly. I use
worth the £12.
Yeah, because for certain things, it gives you a lot more detail of what you're actually doing and what you're configuring. And I found it way more easy to put stuff into rooms and get stuff configured. And it had things like groups and it had... But it did have this thing where it's got like rooms and then zones and then groups and then scenes. And you've got all these different things. And sometimes you almost need like a little guide to say, well, you know, what is a zone and what is a scene and what is a...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because there's different ways that you can use it. And some of the examples they give you are confusing.
And that's the thing that's so weird about HomeKit is that, I mean, it started off as being a protocol. And so they're like, here is a ton of stuff that you can do, but we're not going to give you a way to do it. You're going to have to use an app. So a developer's going to have to add it. And the idea was that each manufacturer would add this stuff, which is then super weird because if you like use the Eve app or my Nanoleaf app, or presumably the Hue app, it lists all of your HomeKit stuff in there because it basically has an entire home controlling app into theirs. So stupid. And then they really, I think it was probably iOS 9 or something, was when they added the home app. And the home app's a piece of shit. I mean, it doesn't do half the stuff. Like, if you want to set an upstairs and a downstairs zone, which is a fairly common thing, you can't do that in the home app. You have to use a third-party app. And, like, when I'm trying to set up my automation, some people are like, oh, yeah, just download, like, the Eve app or something, because you can do it in that, but you can't do it in the home app. And even, like, the UI of it, where it's got these huge, full-pictured, like, backgrounds of, like, red leaves on a trestle or something. It's like, what the fuck is this? This is an absolutely hideous-looking app to start with.
Yeah.
And functionally useless. Well, not useless, but it may as well be. It's a horrible, horrible design. The whole swiping left and right to go through different rooms. It's utterly terrible.
But that thing you said is exactly right. So the ProWarm app, ProWarm came up with their new app. This is the underfloor heating app. And it said, you know, support for HomeKit and everything. And I was like, cool. So you go in and you get exactly what you say. You go to settings and you see HomeKit and Siri. And I think, okay, so I'm going to click this. It's going to say, you know, to use this with HomeKit and Siri, you're going to need the Hub 2. And then you can say things like, do this. Yeah, it's going to give you examples of what you can do. No, when you go in, you get HomeKit homes and it says home. And then it says create a new home. And if you click on home, I'm now seeing all my light bulbs.
Yeah, you see, and you can control it all from there probably as well.
Yeah, it's just so weird. Utterly... Yes, I've got an identify button and I can say what services it uses. And
I have no idea why Apple didn't just make the home app
when they launched HomeKit and have it, you know, do all the stuff that it can do. I have no idea why they were like, yeah, no, we'll just let developers add that. We'll go through all the work of making it so that they can do it, but not do it ourselves. And then we'll release a half-assed version of one of these apps because people keep asking how to add stuff because it's not obvious. Really, really, really odd decision. Really odd.
Yeah, I find it very, you know, I find it confusing that you can't just go into the home app and get examples of what you can do with things, with devices. It's like, yeah. And like you say, the whole swiping left thing is very annoying. And just going into like room configurations and how you can add and edit rooms. Because if I go into, what is it? If I go to, so if I'm in Leo's room now, I'm looking at the Leo room panel and I'm thinking, well, how do I just get to my room list to edit them? And there's like a plus button, which says add accessory, add scene. There's an edit button, which I seem to be able to, things start jiggling and I seem to be able to move things around. Yeah. I'm trying to work out now, where is my edit capability for, where can I see the list of rooms?
Oh, that's that weird button in the top left that looks like a geolocation button.
Okay, but that's just, oh, there you go. That's where it is. This is what I forget every single time. So yeah, you've got like a, yeah, you've got a button in the top left, you press it and it comes up with a, what do they call that? An action sheet comes up, I should know, with a list of all your rooms. And you're thinking, okay, that's just to select what room you're in. No, no, no. You have to scroll down the bottom and then there's room settings. And then you get your list of rooms that you actually have the edit button and you can, that's, you know, so add a room weird. And all that crap. It's just terrible.
I mean, there's stuff in it that isn't exposed to Siri. So like with my Dyson fan, there's a big oscillate button if I go into the fan itself. So it's exposed by the default fan object. But if I say to Siri, hey, oscillate this fan, it even capitalizes the oscillate because it knows that it's a method that it has. And it's like, nope, don't know how to do that. Don't know what oscillate means. It's like, well, why have you capitalized it? Like, why have you matched it exactly the same as it is on the button inside the thing I'm asking you to deal with?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff like that, which is just could be better. I mean, I like HomeKit very much. And I love the fact that I can connect all my stuff together. And it's better than not having it. But I am incredibly critical of what is there because it's shit.
Yeah, it feels like they've created a massively complex system to deal with all, because it's got to deal with all these different devices, all these different capabilities, which is great. But then they've struggled to try and fit that into an app to try and make that work. And like they've dropped the whole, you know, if you go into the other home app, which has a yellow icon and a white.
They should have just bought that. They should have just hired that developer or given him some money and bought that app. Like that app is way better. Like even if it needs a bit of a design update, it was still way better than the home app.
Because that gives you access, when you go into home, you see the devices, but you also get services, you get groups, you get your scenes, and you get your automation. It just seems to expose way more of the HomeKit API than the actual built-in app does, which is...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Stupid. Oh, well.
Good old Apple. That's probably why they're... It's probably why they're failing, and the iPhone X is a disaster.
Oh my god! Did you see Rene Ritchie's video about the iPhone X being a flop? Where he basically got all the articles of people saying it was a flop.
I think I did.
Comparing it to Tim Cook's statements, and then showed like a video of like an analyst saying, "Oh yeah, we do this all the time. We put stories out saying that it's going to be a flop, so that the market tanks, so that we can then profit on it." It's like, yeah, this is why this keeps happening.
Yeah, that was funny. It was like almost like an undercover type footage, wasn't it, or something?
It
sort of looked a bit old, and they're talking. Yeah,
I think it was like 2006.
It's just hysterical. I mean, I think he was talking on, I can't remember what podcast I was listening to. Maybe it was Upgrade or something, where they were talking about this stuff. And it's the same cycle though. Every single year, it's the same. You know, we're going to get the same stories coming up in the next few months about. You know, the rumored iPhone X or iPhone 10 Plus, and there'll be delays because parts, you know, they haven't got parts, or there'll be a, you know, some sort of issue with some part. We'll get the same things every time, and they won't be able to make as many as they think they should and or they need. And there's going to be delays, and then it'll come around again, and there won't be delays, there won't be issues, and it'll all be fine again. Yeah, it's just the same. I would like to know where AirPower is, but you know.
They did say spring originally, so that has. Did they say spring? That's the first quarter. I forget exactly the wording of it, but I seem to remember arguing this with someone on Twitter a while back. I think it's someone from 95 Mac. And they said, oh, why isn't it here yet? I'm sick of them making promises for things they can't deliver. And I was like, well, it isn't even the end of the month that they said it would be in yet. So
True, yeah. It's
a bit early to set up, but it's past that date now. So now you can.
It was
saying it was the same as the AirPods. And I was like, well, the AirPods, they announced and then there was a delay because there was a problem with them or whatever. Whereas this is like the same as like the iMac Pro, where they said, this is a thing that's coming. It's coming in that month or by the end of this date. Like, I would rather they said that than didn't. Like, when they just say, oh, this is a thing we're working on, but we're not going to tell you when it's coming. It's nice to know when it's coming. But, I mean, that's the problem at the moment with AirPower, is that they have, there's no clue as to when it's coming now.
Well, also, they've got to deal with, I mean, this is a variation of the QI standard, isn't it? So they probably got to go through all sorts of regulatory stuff to get it approved, and that could be causing problems. The other thing that I'm wondering how the hell it's going to work is, you know, will it only work with watches that don't have metal bands? Because, you know, you have to lie the watch flat. In all the demos, the watch is lying flat on the device, whereas I've got one of the metal bands, which, you know, you can't undo.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and Hannah made a good point, which is, you know, maybe they're reworking the design a little bit to add the little pop-up thing in the middle. So you'd have like in the mid, so the whole thing would be a QI, you know, QI / Apple charging pad, but you'd also get that combination of, you know, the round Apple Watch charger with the little flip up. You'd get that somewhere on there that could flip up and still work to do the metal bands, because they sell the metal bands. So it's, you know, it's a bit, yeah.
And I always wondered about that pop up thing. I mean, I use it because I was quite pleased I got one of them free with my Apple Watch, the little white stand. And I used to have it where I just laid it over the top, but now I have the little thing popped up and I just close the clasp and put it around. But I don't have any metal straps. I've only got the leather and fluorelastomer.
It works most of the time. I get a couple of issues where it doesn't I don't make contact properly, you know, getting to bed late or whatever. And I think I've put it on there and I haven't you know, I just ignore the fact that there's no noise and I just go to bed and wake up in the morning and stick my watch on and it's on 60%. But to be honest, the battery life's so good now that I can still go through the next day fine. Anyway, you know, it's not an issue anymore. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I guess there's got to be something holding it up. But, you know, the other rumours are...
Standards is probably correct.
But I mean... But this whole issue with Apple and analysts and everything else, it's a bit like what's going on now. So you've got the rumours of, obviously, the Marzipan stuff, which you wanted to mention. You know, there was this big rumor mill that this is going to come in WWDC this year, that it's going to be huge. It's going to.
I don't know why anyone thought that would be the case.
Yeah, but this is what gets me. You get this stuff like the TV that's never come, that they go, oh, it's going to come. And then just before WWDC, when whoever wrote the original thing realizes it's bullshit, then there's going to be, oh, yeah, they're going to delay it. They're going to delay it. It's not ready. And it's like, we don't even know if it's happening. You know, there are rumors, but no little birdies have told certain people that it's definitely happening. And it could be that what this is been, you know, misinterpreted by reporters who go for the big story. It's a bit like the ARM thing. You know, this ARM thing could be that they're not going to replace Intel chips with ARM. It just means that all new Macs from 2020 will have this T3 chip or whatever it's called, you know, that the iMac Pro has, which is an ARM chip. Which means the story would be true in the sense that Apple are going to be putting their own processors in future Macs. It just doesn't mean it's the processor that's powering the Mac. It's not going to necessarily replace Intel. And that's why German's story, when you read it, is completely non-specific. It's very vague. And so he can go back to it and said, I told you they were going to put ARM chips in there, you know? And it's just all bullshit. And it's the same, like, there's now rumors of this MacBook Air refresh. There's going to be a new design MacBook Air. That literally makes no sense to me at all. Because to me, the MacBook replaced... Everyone keeps going about the MacBook Pro replaced the MacBook Air. No, the MacBook replaced the MacBook Air. Because the MacBook is small and light. And, you know, that's its successor.
If you go back to the very, very first MacBook Air, people shat all over it because it was ridiculously underpowered and it was ridiculously expensive. And that is the MacBook. The next version of the MacBook will be probably cheaper and it will probably be more powerful. And that will finally kill off the MacBook Air. But people like to hope that they'll get the thing that they want. I mean, it's, you know, it's like the Mac Mini. I want a new Mac Mini. one isn't coming. I'm not sure if one ever will. But that doesn't mean I'm going to go buy an old Mac Mini, because they're woefully underpowered now.
Yeah, and it's like the MacBook Pro thing. It's like, you know, Intel have got these new chips. So in theory, now they could do a MacBook Pro 13-inch, which has got 32 gig of RAM. Awesome. Supports 32 gig. But everyone's going on about there's petitions now for them to recall MacBook Pros to replace the keyboard and stuff. And people petitioning to get USB-A put back in. And it's like, do you really think that Apple are going to take a MacBook Pro and do an upgrade to it that's going to add slower one-way insertion USB-A ports just because there's this bullshit fake news nonsense about the fact that everyone has to carry a bag of dongles with them if they've got a new MacBook, which is utter nonsense. You know, I've got one hyperdrive thing that I slot in, and I use it very rarely if I ever have to do SD card stuff or anything, or plug in a USB-A device. Very rarely. It's one thing. It sits in my bag all the time if I need it. I've virtually, you know, I won't even use it once a week. Maybe once a month if I'm doing some drone stuff or something. That's the only time I'll ever use it. There's no bag of dongles. You know, there's no hassle. I'd much prefer USB-C.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a MacBook Pro with four USB-C ports on it, and I have a single USB-C to USB-A dongle because I thought I'd need it, and I don't think I've ever used it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. I bought some of those, two of those Apple ones at the time. And yes, you know, it was an expensive purchase because I had to buy a few dongles at the time because there weren't all this other third-party stuff that inevitably did come out. And I wanted to make sure I could connect to stuff. But at the end of the day, I didn't end up using them. You know, they've sat there. And the only reason I've got two USB-Cs going into mine at the moment is I've got a secondary little Oscar monitor, which won't work off my hub. And that's the only reason I have to do that.
But, oh, yeah.
If eventually I won't need that monitor anyway, and I can get rid of it, and I can just have the one USB-C. I'd much prefer that. I can't think of anything worse than going back to. It drives me nuts just dealing with those micro USBs now, where you have to, you know, they're so small. They're so small and indented on devices that you do the same thing where you try it one way, try it the other way, try it one way, try it the other way, try it the fourth time. Now it's gone in, and it's the same as you did the first time. Yeah, it's a pain in the ass. But this is it. This is what we get. You know, you get people who don't realize that, you know, the Mac is still relevant. People who go on about, oh, the Mac's not relevant anymore. You know, they should just switch everything to iOS.
Well, then selling more Macs each year than
what,
previously.
What do you make, and what do you build iOS apps in? You know, you're going to build them on an iPad? Not at the moment.
Christ.
So it's still relevant, but it sells a small percentage of their revenue compared to iOS devices. And out of that small percentage, there's even a tinier percentage of people who effectively just want a PC, but don't want to admit that. They want a Mac, what do you call it, Hackintosh, essentially, don't they? They want a PC, but they don't like Windows. So they want to have a PC box that they can do whatever shit they can want to do to it, but they do want to run Mac OS. Well, you know, if you want that, go and get a Hackintosh. Go and do something like that. That's going to solve that problem. Whereas they want to compromise these devices. And then the other thing that makes me laugh is when people complain about the new keyboards and go, oh, yeah, they're noisier. And then you discover that the same people who plug them into a monitor and then have a mechanical keyboard that goes clack, 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 clack. It's just, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I had one issue with the 2016, but one that I had, the Touch Bar Mac, MacBook Pro 13-inch, and I had one issue with the tab key where it was sort of a bit dodgy. And I should have just taken it in to get it fixed, but instead I tried to clean it myself and lift it up, which was a big mistake because then I broke the little catch underneath. Ironically, in breaking it, it became 100% reliable and was much better. I know not to do that again. But I've sold that machine and I've got the 2017 version, which I think's got the butterfly keyboard 2 or whatever they call it, and I haven't had any problems with it. You know, I like
mine's,
it. I
mean, mine's absolutely fine.
I do like the Magic Keyboard. You know, the Magic Keyboard is still my favorite keyboard, but I don't have a problem typing on the Touch Bar, and I don't. The Touch Bar machine, and I don't have a problem with the Touch Bar either. I don't use it because I've got it docked all the time. You know, the only time I use the Touch Bar is when I'm actually using the MacBook keyboard. So, you know, it's easy to say, "Oh, yeah, the Touch Bar's a disaster." Well, for a lot of people who just dock their machine, you're never going to touch the Touch Bar.
Yeah. I like the Touch Bar. I wish that maybe the escape key wasn't in the Touch Bar because I use that a lot and that's a bit of a pain that I can't feel it. But apart from that, the touch bar's fine. I don't have any issue with it. Didn't make much of a difference, yeah. Really. I quite like it for auto completion. Like I was filling out a form the other day on my MacBook, and then it came up just like iOS with that little auto complete bit. It's like, ooh, that's nice. Just tap that. Done. I don't see the problem. I mean, people just like complaining about shit a lot of the time.
Well, of course they do. This is the interesting thing about the Mac Pro when it eventually comes out. You're guaranteed that the usual suspects will be, I didn't want it working like that. Oh, no, I can't do this or I can't do that. It's just like, oh, my God. It just gets so, so tedious.
Just be thankful that there is a MacBook Pro and a Mac Pro and that you don't have to use a Windows computer. That's my feeling on these things generally. I mean, back to like the Marzipan stuff and what's going to happen at WWDC. I mean, the most interesting things at WWDC are always... And just a small side note, I fucking hate it when people call it WWDC. That really frustrates me. Really, really gets me right in the... Oh. If I listen to a podcast with Jim Darrenpole talking about WWDC, I just turn it off. I can't deal with it. I cannot deal with it. WWDC. Hate it. Anyway, the most interesting things are the times when they surprise you because stuff hasn't leaked because there's no supply chain about it. So it's always software. So like the best example I can think of is when they announced Swift and no one knew that was coming. That was a complete shock. I don't think there were any articles going, oh, they're going to introduce a new language. And so software is the easiest one to write about and to make shit up about because there's literally no way that it could be disproved. Because if I say, oh, yeah, they're going to build a unified thing to make macOS apps and iOS apps, then if it doesn't happen, I can say, oh, yeah, they're going to do it next year. Or this still not going to work it out. But also, it's a pretty easy guess. I mean, that's like saying, oh, the new iPhone's going to have a better camera. It's a pretty safe bet as well. I've heard. It's a pretty safe bet, so you can say it, because if it does come true, it's like, yeah, I knew that. I used to follow someone on Twitter, and if ever I said anything about an Apple announcement, he'd be like, oh, I've heard it's going to do this, and be like, he knew and had sources at Apple. And it's like, A, you don't have sources at Apple that are telling you this shit, and B, if you did, they wouldn't be telling you stuff. You're just making it up, and nearly all the time he was wrong, but that didn't matter to him. So with this Marzipan thing, I mean, it sounds plausible to me. I mean, the Mac software-wise hasn't been doing great when you look at things like the Mac App Store. I mean, the Mac App Store still has gradients on its buttons. It's so like out of date, and developers are abandoning it. A lot of iOS developers don't make Mac apps because they think it's difficult because it's different. And so I can definitely see them going down a unified route because that stuff's fairly easy and... Add to it rumors about them getting ARM processors and all the rest of it, like we discussed last episode. I could see it definitely being plausible. Do I think it will happen this year? No, for the simple reason that most of the rumors coming out have been that they're doing, you know, stability, bug fixes, focusing on all that, those issues, which I believe to be true. I mean, again, you could just make that up. I mean, it's plausible. That's what people want to happen. So it could just be people are saying it's happening because that's what they want to happen. And they're hoping that their voice will make Apple change their mind about whatever they are actually doing. But realistically, I could see that this year you get the bug fix update and the year after you'll get the, oh, hey, we've got this whole new thing. And by the way, we're getting ARM Macs and here's how you're going to deal with it. And now you can build Mac apps and iOS apps in the same thing. And isn't it all wonderful? That makes sense to me. Do I think that would happen this year? No. And that's what this latest report has come out saying. Oh, yeah, that's not happening this year. And apparently, I think it was... who was it? John Gruber. He had some stuff about it where he'd heard that this was happening and he has a name for it as well, which he's like MD5... No, not MD5 hashed. He used some hash and put it on Twitter so later on he can say he was right.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be interesting. But he said that's not happening this year. That's definitely a next year thing. Which makes sense to me. I mean, that just seems reasonable.
Yeah, so, but couldn't it be as simple as, I mean, maybe this is what it is. Because obviously I'm, you know, the stuff I work in is slightly detached from using, or is detached from using Xcode and Swift and Objective-C directly. Yep. But I'm aware of the framework. So is it possible that this Marzipan could just manifest itself as essentially a UE kit for Mac, so that you're coding with the same, because it's AppKit on Mac.
Exactly. Yeah.
So could it be as simple as UEKit, which supposedly is not as good as AppKit in terms of the capabilities that you can do? You know, you can do much more with AppKit than you can with UEKit. But for a lot of developers who are just trying to say, you know, the Twitter app, let's say, and just make that work on a Mac, so it's the same code base, it could just be UEKit for Mac, and that's what Marzipan is.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, you can change a lot of things that start NS, that start UI to NS, and it will work on the Mac. A lot of things are the same things, but there are a lot of differences. Like, I mean, the most noticeable one is that your coordinates are different. So 0, 0 does not mean top left; it means bottom left.
Because
their coordinate system's different, which is troubling.
So if they did do a UEKit for Mac, then they could make it work the same. So that you would say,
I mean, yeah, my assumption would be, I mean, also because you've got to think that UIKit is actually all built in Objective-C. So even when you write your app in Swift, you're still having to do some Objective-C stuff like. So, for example, your function might have to have at Objective-C in the front of it so that it can be recognized by Notification Center and stuff like that, which is fine, but it just shows that it's still two separate languages. My assumption would be that they won't port UIKit over to macOS. They'll actually rewrite UIKit as something else, like XKit or something, and then have that on both. And it'll be written that in Swift, so it'd be native Swift frameworks that are the same on both platforms.
That makes sense.
And then you can keep writing stuff in UIKit, although that'll be deprecated.
Yeah.
You can keep writing stuff in AppKit, although that'll be deprecated. And then slowly people will move over to using XKit. And I would imagine XKit will be the point we get to where it is, this is Swift only. You cannot write Objective-C apps if you want to use XKit. And that'll start the slow fade out of Objective-C, is my gut feeling. I mean, I have no knowledge at all. It's just I was doing it, this is probably how I would do it.
That would make sense. And then you'd basically say, right, I want to build this version of the app, I want to compile this version of the app. What are you targeting? iOS built. What are you targeting? Mac built. And you get a separate file for each and you upload those or whatever.
Yeah, the same as you do now with tvOS. So tvOS is UIKit and then its own special tvkit, I guess. I don't know what it's called anymore. And the same with WatchOS. WatchOS is, you can use a large amount of standard. Well, actually, WatchOS is a weird one because it is its own stuff, because it's a very niche app sort of building language. It's WatchKit, so you've got your own special buttons and stuff. Whereas tvOS, you do have, I'm fairly sure I'm right about this, I've not built a TV app in a while, but you have things like a UI button is still a UI button, whereas on the watch, it's not. It's a WK button. It's a different thing. So iOS and tvOS are much more similar in the way that they work, and that's how I imagine that they would extend it to macOS as well. Maybe the watch would stay separate because it's so weird.
I just wonder how many people are misconstruing all this to think that they can take an IPA file and run it on a Mac. You know, it's not going to be like that.
No, well, I mean, in theory, it could be. I mean, you can do that between the iPhone and the iPad.
Yeah, true. Well, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose if they did something where, because I mean, in theory they could do this. I mean, we've said before about how iOS apps run in the simulator, but obviously they're Intel-based builds that are being built to run in the simulator. But in theory, they've done it before with a transition layer, translation layer. So you could have a stopgap thing where you could say, here's an IPA, you copy it over to the Mac, you run it, it runs within this translation layer.
That's that also makes the it tricky run part, because IPAs aren't the same as they used to be. So your IPA that you generate when you archive your app is a big fat binary full of literally every single version of the app. But when you upload it to Apple and you download it from the App Store, you only get the little slice that you need, which is your IPA file for an app might be like 180 megs, but then the iPhone 10 version might be 80 megs. The iPhone 8 version will probably be smaller because it's using the at 2x resolution images, not the at 3x resolution images. Yeah. So it does vary from where you download it as well. But I can totally see, you build your app, it's universal, so it's iPhone, iPad, and macOS, And then when you export it, you get your single big IPA file, upload it to the App Store. And now if you download it from the Mac App Store, it's, you know, the same app. But it's the macOS version of it.
Yeah, makes
sense.
And
you could probably put that into pricing as well, so that if you download the macOS app, you already own the iPhone app and the iPad app, because it's the same. In the same way that if you download a universal iPad app, then, you know, the iOS app doesn't cost you extra. It's already there. It's already free. And if you if you want to sell them separately, you can. I mean, that's what Things does. Things, for example, has separate iPad and iPhone apps.
Yeah.
So they can charge separately for them, which is annoying.
Otherwise that'll be the next complaint from developers, isn't it? It's like, oh, I built a universal app, built an app for everything now, but I only get paid once. So that'll be the next thing.
Well, you can export them separately still. I mean,
Just
the option would be there that you could do it all at once, but you don't have
to. It sounds interesting.
That's just a store thing.
It does sound interesting.
I mean, put it this way, I don't write Mac apps. I did a few weeks ago. I built a very, very basic one for myself for doing some YouTube uploading for some editing stuff I was doing. But I don't make Mac apps and sell them. I don't offer it commercially as a service either. If they introduce this, then I will, because at that point it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely.
At the moment, I could build an app if I wanted to. I could put the time in to learn the differences and go through it, and I could probably, you know, bumble my way through and charge for it. But I don't want to, because I know that something better is going to come along to replace it at some point. So I'm like, every time I think about getting a book and sitting down and really properly looking into building a Mac app, I just wait.
Yeah, I suppose in the... Then the other thing to think about with WWDC is iOS 12 and what that's going to bring, but we can talk about that another time. That'll be quite interesting.
I think we'll probably discuss that nearer the time. At the moment, who knows? Who knows what's going to be? I mean, that's the great thing about software, is that generally the developers at Apple don't leak because they want to keep their jobs. Hardware chain leaks all over the place because they get offered a shit ton of money by case manufacturers to find out what differences there are, and obviously, you can look in the supply chain and see what camera module they're using and this that they're using. And that's how we knew it was going to have facial recognition, because obviously the IR blaster leaked like months before. So you're sort of like, well, there's only one thing you'd really use that for. Either they're building some sort of AR thing to map the world around them, or it's facial recognition.
Yeah.
But the software didn't leak. You didn't know how it was going to actually work. So it will be interesting to see what they do. My assumption is that it's going to be bug fixes, and that stability is going to be like the key thing about it. Probably more stuff on privacy, and, you know, since they've made all those changes in iOS 11.3 that tell you every time it's doing anything privacy related, I expect there'll probably be more of that. But apart from that, who knows? It's just a guessing game, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I've sort of given up really trying to predict too much with this stuff. It just becomes a waste of time, really.
As much as I used to, because I just don't care. I'll watch it and go, nice.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, especially now, we've got to a point where they announce stuff and then they don't deliver it for fucking ages, which is infuriating. Because that was the one thing I loved about Apple, is that when they announced something,
they surprised you.
That meant you were downloading it that day, or at least a beta that day. And if it was hardware, you were buying it next week. Whereas now with both, they've slipped with both. So you get things like the Air Power Mat. Oh, this is a thing we're bringing out at some point. It's like, okay. Or the iMac Pro when they first announced it. It's like, oh yeah, this will be coming by the end of the year. And it's like, I understood it for the original iPhone and for like the watch, because they didn't want it to leak, you know, during all the FTC filings and all that stuff. But now it seems that they're doing it for a lot of stuff, which is... a shame. AirPods is another good example where it's like, oh yeah, they're coming in October, and it's like, oh, it's so long away.
Well, even with the phone launches, when they did the iPhone 8, the iPhone 10 and everything, and it's like, you can buy the iPhone 8 next week and the iPhone 10 in a month. You're like, no!
Yeah.
So annoying.
They're doing the same with software too, because it's things like, oh yeah, AirPlay 2. I mean, that was announced at WWDC last year, and we still don't have it.
I know, but what I love about that is this whole thing with solving things through software. It's a bit like with Siri. where, you know, people are, I mean, it's bad that it's taken this long, but obviously people complain about the HomePod being useless and all this stuff because it doesn't have all these features. But once these features come out, that'll be it. It's got all those features. And then they'll find something else to complain about, you know, go back to the staining wood rings or something. And it's a bit like with Siri. I really would, I mean, it's, I doubt that they would just do an update remotely, but Siri is a server-based service, and it would be awesome if they just went, oh, by the way, we're upgrading Siri today, available to everyone, and it's going to do this, you know, and they just sort of blow people away with a ridiculous Google-style demo that's actually real and works. and it's just done straight on the server, and it just works, you know, because there's obviously all the complaints about Siri, and I've got complaints about Siri. I find it very frustrating when it just doesn't understand basic words. But it is trying to do a lot. You know, you're in a noisy room or you're in a car and it's trying to understand what you're saying. I do have a problem with it though, where, you know, especially when it doesn't learn. That's my biggest issue. It's like, if I've said something and you've misunderstood me and then I've corrected you, or I've said it again and it's what I wanted you to do, it would be good if it learned that, if it could understand that, and then realize that maybe I say a word slightly wrong, or it thinks I say it wrong, but it's now learned the new version. You know what I mean? That's the stuff that frustrates me, because it's that simple stuff when you're trying to just, you know, set a scene or turn something on or whatever, and it just doesn't understand basic commands. I find that quite frustrating.
But I mean, there's so much that they are announcing software-wise that then doesn't come for a long time. If you look back at WWDC last year, we had things like the Apple Pay card thing that you get, the Messages app, which is US only, is fine.
Yeah.
But that didn't come out. I think that was like iOS 11.2, maybe, that launched in the US.
Yeah.
So it's like that was several months after. You've got AirPlay 2, which is still not here. You've got stuff like the business iMessage stuff and the HomeKit stuff that all came with 11.3. And it gets to a point where it's like, it worries me the amount of stuff that they announce that is actually coming a long way away. Like,
feels like they're pressured
within
into
a year. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this year is just going to be like, yeah, you know what? There aren't many new features, because, you know, there ain't much more you can add to a phone. But here is a load of stability stuff and, you know, general improvements, quality of life stuff.
It just feels like...
next year, do the whole, you know, I imagine this X kit or whatever we're going to call it will come with like a substantial iOS redesign, because it's probably about time, because it will have been 6 years, which was the same length of time from the first to iOS 7. Yeah, this seems weird that we've had the iOS 7 redesign for nearly six years now.
6 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I suppose five years now, but it will be six
come
next year, which is when I expect this will all happen, because then you can do a decent redesign of, you know, iOS stuff and probably macOS as well, and be like, here is the new design, and it's all been built with our new system that we've written, and that's now available to developers. There you go.
And then the next day, Dribbble has loads of redesigns of it, because people don't like the new design, like they did with 7. It looks too flat. It looks terrible. Oh, I prefer the lozenge. I prefer the lozenge look. I mean, it's so funny. So funny looking at screenshots of iOS 6 now, thinking, my God.
You know,
we were like animals.
I've always been a big fan of iOS 7. I've always liked it. I liked the clean, the minimalist look. But I do love iOS 6 as well. Like, there were some bits where it got carried away. Game Center is the obvious fallback. Or the Corinthian leather in the iPad calendar app. That was also a little niche.
Or the little shine, the metal shine on sliders.
Oh, I loved that on the podcast app.
Yeah, when you tilted the phone, the accelerometer, they just
that was
make
beautiful.
The shine glimmer. That was very good.
So I really liked that whole period of design. I love a bit of skeuomorphism. I'm working on an app at the moment. I can't say much about it, but there's a concept of like a loyalty card in it, and the designer that's working on it has made it look like a proper, like almost like a cinema ticket, like with a clip out the side of it, like an old fashioned kind of thing. I was like, oh, that looks so good. I love it. Back to skeuomorphism. Here we go.
Yeah, cool. That's good stuff.
So I like stuff like that. I like a little bit of making it look like the real world. I think the flat buttons are a bit boring, but
I mean, it's like the Google I/O stuff where they announced Material Design 2, and then they show the examples, and it's like, it's just more flat buttons with curves. I mean, there's nothing It's still flat colored buttons, just with curves and shadows. I don't understand what's new. You can still do that now, probably. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's just styling. It's like, we've made this flat button even flatter. Don't understand it. I mean, I agree with the leather stitching was a little over the top, but there's certain things that were quite nice. Yeah. And also made it quite logical how things worked, you know. It's like GarageBand's still a good example, I suppose, because GarageBand is, not that I use it, but that's probably a good example of, you know, buttons and things in there that look like dials on amps and things, you know.
The plus side about having the iOS 7 design is that I can actually design apps.
Yes, exactly.
it's not that difficult. Well, I probably designers listen to this that are going to be absolutely furious that I just said that. But, you know, choose a nice font, stick a load of white space around, plain icons, no gradients. The buttons you can just do purely in code. It's like, nice and easy. Whereas
your standard
back
controls,
in the old days,
line everything up.
Yeah. I mean, I built an app that I made look like a field notes book back in like the iOS 6 days, because it was like an app that let you, it like basically used the Gowalla and Foursquare location stuff.
Right.
And it showed you the places that were near you, and it was like a really light way for you to check into those, because if you were data roaming, it cost a fortune to use those services. So it was like a really trimmed down one, so like a check-in would use like something like 1 kilobyte rather than 2 megs. And I did it all, and it looked like a field notes book. It was all like handwriting fonts and like checkboxes that were a bit wobbly that ticked in. And it looked horrendous now that I think about it. Proper page turning animations and stuff. But that was a lot of fun, and I liked that style of design. But now, obviously, it's much easier. I can just go, you know, choose a nice color, choose a nice font, done. Plain buttons everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, I like that.
I've got to go shortly, but have you got anything you wanted to talk about Google I.O.?
No, we'll talk about it yesterday. We can mention it next time. Very quickly, the only thing was they did this AI demo of a, I can't remember what the hell they call it now. They called it something different, but it's basically a Google assistant phoning a hairdresser to book an appointment.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And it's, I mean, the whole thing, it was very weird. You know, I hate it when you phone Apple. Apple do this when you phone them for support and stuff, and they go, "Look, I'm just checking your details," and you hear like clackety clackety clack 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 clack.
Oh, God,
and it's like, you don't stop pretending that your computer, you're real. I know you're not real. You don't have to do that. And so in
that's
this example,
skeuomorphism with AI.
Yeah. so in this example, they introduced this thing. I mean, it was a great sounding voice, and it said things like and little things like this, you know, to sort and stutters and things to sort of try and sound more human. My problem with the conversation, if you listen to the call, is the person on the other end, the supposed human, doesn't speak like a human. the way they say things, it just feels like a scripted thing from a TV show, like if someone went to a shop, like the scene in Friends where they're trying to buy shoes, or he's trying to find shoes, and it's like, I don't have that in this, I have it in a so-and-so. It was all very matter-of-fact, the way they spoke, whereas it sounded like no hairdresser. Yeah, it sounded like no hairdresser, no shop that I've ever phoned where you're trying to book an appointment. It just doesn't, you know, there's noise in the background, there's other things going on, people have an accent, it just didn't sound right, basically. But it's, again, an impressive demo. These things are always impressive in a demo.
I have multiple issues with it. I mean, I don't mind, you know, intelligent AI and stuff, that's great, but just book it online would be the first thought.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't have bookings online because they've not caught up with that. Well, just phone them yourself.
Yeah.
I don't really see the problem it's solving.
I mean, can you imagine you get a confirmation going, I've booked your head shave for two, whoa, what the hell, I didn't ask for a head shave.
Well, it's also, like, I mean, like,
the wrong time on the wrong day.
The only way I can see this being the reason for it is for people that are like too shy or have anxiety to phone people or something. But you're still going to have to go and talk to them when they're cutting your fucking hair.
I know. And the
doesn't
other
doesn't make sense to me.
The other demo they did, which everyone was critical of, loads of people were critical of Apple for, because that's what they should have showed off with the AR kit, was AR and Google Maps. So now you'll be able to hold up Google Maps, whether it'll work on an iPhone or not, I don't know. But I think it's an Android P thing or something. You hold up the Google Maps, and it now uses AR to point in the direction that you need to go. You know, so it's telling you. So. Sounds great, yeah. Nice way of using AR. But like we've talked about before with the supermarket demo, it's the wrong device to have that on.
Yeah, because why would you want to hold your phone up in front of you the whole time?
Exactly.
That's the whole reason the watch has like the notifications to turn you left and right.
Exactly, which is what I said on Twitter. You're going to be walking down a road with your arm at almost full length, with your phone in front of you, easily knocked out of your hand, easily stolen, you know, telling the world, hey, I'm walking around with my iPhone 10 or my Android device or whatever. Great demo. Doesn't work practically. It's not going to work in a car. It's only going to work when you're walking around, and only going to work. But now, add glasses.
And it's also unnecessary.
And it's awesome.
Just read the damn map.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Again, it's good demo stuff. It's like the old, you know, very quick story about the old days of pocket PC computers and Scions, when I used to have a Scion. And Scion Series 5, Scion Series 3. Series 5 was an amazing device. You know, I programmed on it. I could literally write apps on a train on it. It was awesome. Pocket PC came along, and they had a black and white version. Scion didn't want to go with color because of battery life and everything. So they'd made that decision. They weren't going to go down that route. Bit like a bit of an Apple attitude to stuff, really. We know best. Microsoft came up with the color pocket PC. It was a piece of shit. You know, the battery life was about an hour. You got virtually nothing from it. But where they sold loads is that you went into a shop like Dixon's or one of the stores over here, and you looked at a Scion, and they said, here's a Scion, play with a Scion. Oh, take a look at this pocket PC. Comes up with a music video or a little clip or something. Like, yeah, I'll take that. Because it was a demo. It sold. And that's what demos are. You know, you do what always bugs me about voice assistant stuff, especially, is when they demo this stuff on a quiet stage with a very nicely spoken person asking for instructions, and it all works perfectly. They don't test it in a house with a TV on in the background, the dog barking, a kid crying. You know, show me it in the real world. Show me it in a car where you've got the background noise of the car driving or horns going off. That's what I'm impressed with. That stuff, if they can get that working, and like I think Luke said, maybe Apple are working on this amazing Siri that's going to do all this stuff, or maybe it's not ready yet. Maybe they can't solve that problem yet because it still needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Dingus is great, Echo is great, but it still fails a lot of the time. You know, it's not
all
perfect.
These things are. Like the AR maps thing, I mean, my NDA on this has probably expired a long time ago, but ages ago I was asked by Weatherspoons to build them an app, and they wanted it was when we had like Layer. Do you remember Layer? It was long before
reality.
Well, it was an augmented reality, like used Street View and it did it on top with the accelerometer. Yeah, it wasn't great, but it worked. And that was going to show you where to go to get to the nearest pub. And I was like, I'm not going to build it because it's going to be too difficult, realistically. But also, B, it's a really shit idea. Like, you really don't need to. You don't need this. Like, the top-down map is clear and everyone can understand it. You don't need a giant arrow pointing you down the road. And this is exactly the same. Like, I think even if I had AR glasses on, I wouldn't need a map to be pointing a big bloody arrow down the street for me to follow. It's just, maybe it's because I like maps. I've always liked maps since I was like a kid, like proper maps. And so I can read a map and understand how to get from point A to point B without needing a giant floating arrow to tell me where to go. But I despair for humanity. That's all I'm going to say.
Everyone's walking around with their arms full length, you know. It's just, very strange. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Awesome, right. I'll catch you next time.
Cool. Cheers. Bye.